lock for me. Yes, we're locked. Locked and loaded. And the intro music goes away, fades away gently. And we are surrounded. We're back from Joey's hiatus. And it's GloucesterCast 166. We have a new person here that hasn't been here before, Steve Winslow.
Thank you.
Steve Winslow is here to talk about Stage 4 Park Beautification Project. We have Donna Artizzoli from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Good morning, Gloucester.
We have Kim Smith.
Good morning.
And we have Leslie Heffron, who always brings our art rundown. Very nice to be. It's good to be back. We're going to be probably doing two podcasts a week, so whoever can make it, please feel free to show up. We're going to start today with Steve Winslow. Steve, why don't you give a little background on what is going on with the proposal or what it is that's happening at Stage 4.
So yeah, I'm with the City Community Development Department, and I work with Mass in Motion Cape Ann. So we're always looking for opportunities to get people to be more active and access to healthier food. So
can I stop you for one second?
Wait, okay.
Can you mention some of the projects that you've been involved with before? Burnham Field, right?
Burnham's Field. So we started that from with John McElhaney, mm-hmm. just from literally meeting him at a copier at City Hall Annex, and going from there. Getting all the new pathways there, the Oval Playground, redoing mm-hmm. that one, and of course Newell Stadium. So those are all projects that I got involved in helping to.
Also the bike racks, right?
The bike racks, the bike lanes, some other things that way. Giving some seed money to backyard growers to be involved in all the schools and stuff like that.
Seed money,
that's it.
So backyard growers, like that.
I like that.
Just that. So however we can get people to be more active and eat healthier. The other thing we're working on is a Cape Ann trails map, so that there's a map of all the trails in Cape Ann. So, but one of the things I'm picking up on, I got those big projects done. I was kind of looking for something else, and with the 400th anniversary of Gloucester coming up, people are talking about Stage 4 Park because that's where the first fishermen landed and started fishing here.
The Dorchester Company.
The Dorchester Company. So Dorchester folks. And so that's something on people's mind, but it's also the city hasn't really done a lot to beautify it in a lot. A lot of citizens groups, the Rotary Club, the flower groups, have all done some great work there, but there's some things that really need work there. The lawn around the bandstand's in really rough shape. This is really dry summer, and the lawn just really died out and it's dusty, and the farmer's market is in there, and people complaining about the dust during the farmer's market. So we're looking at that area. Some of it is like, if we keep the market there, is that going to mess up a new lawn? So we're looking at trying to find another spot in the area for the farmer's market to keep the market there. And then we're looking to maybe connect up one of the long-term plans of the Open Space Committee and John McElhaney that we worked on, that is making a connection up to Ravenswood. And people would like to have some water recreation there, so maybe some kayak storage. So the basic thing is Jane Shoplick, who actually did some of the landscape architect work for the Burnham's Field and the Oval, has agreed to, she did sort of some concept sketches for us. And looking at particularly the area between the visitor center and the bandstand, really actually redoing the pathway there a little bit, that will create some more space for the bandstand, even reshaping kind of the bowl around the bandstand so it's a little bit nicer for a summer concert to sit there, redoing the lawn, just spiffing up that whole area between the bandstand and the visitor center will really be nice. So that's one key part of it. I think people really responded to that very well. And the other thing that we're talking about is the parking lot across the street. It actually has some very nice views of the harbor right mm-hmm. there, but it's just a parking lot. And in talking to the folks in the farmer's market, where they are near the bandstand's a nice spot, but it's not that easy to set up a market there. So they had another concept of being a little bit more compact, and Jane Shoplick, the landscape architect, thought, well, let's set up in the parking lot. So we're actually talking about doing something called, I call it the Quadricentennial Terrace. So we would actually turn part of the parking lot into this plaza that could be used for the farmer's market, but it'd also have a terrace overlooking the, sort of by the cupboard, you get a great view there.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
So gorgeous view. So we would actually, you know, create a nice stone wall, have some benches, trees. It'd be a place like if you're the farmer's market, you get some, you know, some guacamole or some smoked fish or something. You can sit there and eat a little bit, have a nice late lunch or whatever snack. And it would just be all right there. And, you know, it would be set up so that on the Thursday that would be available for the market, but it would be, people could park there other days of the week type of thing. So
yeah,
so that's what we're looking at there, which would be, you know, an exciting opportunity. And that, like I say, it gives some more space for the market, and it would work things
How
out.
Much input from farmer market people has gone into that? Or did you come up with the idea for this and then bring it to them?
The market people were already coming up with some criteria what they'd like for a market. And by the bandstand, it's a very long and narrow stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not ideal for a market. What they really wanted, we're sort of imagining this crossing thing where all the vendors are much closer
mm-hmm.
together, so that you don't have to go down a long line
right.
of people to get to Farmer Dave's or whatever. It's much more compact, but all the vendors fit in, and then it's set up so that they can drive right into where their booths are and that type of thing. So that's something that actually came out of some of the discussions of where we could maybe do that. So it's actually it's based on some information they provided, the landscape architects. So,
mm-hmm.
and then it's a beautiful setting, as we redo it. So that's exciting. The other thing we're looking at is some like kayak storage, so people could, bring down their kayak there and store it there, so they could come by and.
Like almost like it's a for a season.
For a season, yeah. I mean, I was up in Augusta, Maine, and along the river up there, they actually have these things called kayak condos, where it's this big, long kind of tube. You can stick your kayak in there and lock it up, so it's weatherproofed. It's locked in there, and you can keep
it. You don't have to lug it on top of your car.
You don't have to lug it on top of your car. I mean, for some people, that'd be convenience. And we don't know whether it'd be set up that maybe something that, maybe someone could come down and, pay $5 or $10 an hour to use. So we don't know how exactly it'll play out, but it would be nice to have that down there by Cressy Beach type.
Yeah, because it's hard to put your kayak in.
Now, is there any?
Yeah,
So I know. So
yeah,
reading some online comments of
people,
that there was concern about that this plan is mm-hmm. going to dislocate the cyclocross.
Right.
Is that something that might happen?
That really, the area we're working on is, it's a place where the cyclocross, they might have their beer tent, or they're not racing right here where we'd be doing it, so that space is still available for the beer tent and their, their t-shirt things or whatever. The market area, they could, put tents there or park there, so we don't think it'll necessarily have any impact on that. This is just sort of a narrow spot. I mean, that was, there's certainly the cyclocross is a bigger issue.
It's
fabulous. And it is, it's a great kind of off-season event, gets a lot of people in town. It's
great,
a thing.
Great shoulder event.
It's a great event.
So it's, and it's a really nice spot to do that, a really fun spot. It's a great thing. But obviously, that's something the city always works out with the cyclocross folks and the, I think that cyclocross folks have been very dedicated to restoring any damage and that type of thing. So this is definitely not intended to exclude in any way what they're doing.
At that
so,
meeting that you had,
yeah.
the recent meeting,
yeah.
Did you have any, did you present any sketches?
We did present sketches, so I'll be, this weekend I'll be,
I don't have the sketches. Can you provide them?
Yeah, I'll put them up.
Put them
on the city and send a link so people can. Yeah,
I will tell. I'll tell you right now. People love to visualize
mm-hmm.
what
right.
you're talking about. That'd be fantastic.
Right. So we'll put it up on the city website and send you a link.
You have that nice landscape drawing with the terraced area, that very specific one.
Yeah,
I can
sort of make close ups of that type of thing. It's like I say, one of the things I have to say is like. this is very conceptual. You know, I at part of the meeting, I showed, you know, what the process we went through Burnham's Field. I mean, one of the things that's driving this is a grant due in early February. That's, you know, $250,000 grant that they don't come around every year. So, and Gloucester would have a good chance. This is the same grant that, you know, St. Peter's Park years ago was used to revamp the St. Peter's Park area. So we're pursuing that same type of money. So that's, yeah, there's a little urgency there. So it's a very concept thing.
When we post this,
yeah,
we'll make sure that we
discuss that.
So it doesn't end up like the Cameron's thing where they show up they put a conceptual picture of what the building was going to look like, and everybody say, "Oh my God, there's no windows on this building. How can it?" It was a space holder. You know what I mean?
So
we don't want that to happen.
No.
We want to say, you know, that's why they're having the meetings, because they like input, I imagine.
Right, yeah. Now, I mean, we want to make sure the community's on board as we're applying for this grant. I mean, the process then, if, you know, we're successful in getting the grant, we'll have more community meetings. So we'll have, you know, the designer come back and do some more detailed stuff and then really take it to another level. And then, I mean, ultimately end up with construction drawings. But like at Burnham's Field, I mean, we did this concept, got the grant, and then had three more community meetings after that. So, yeah.
In Stage 4 Park already has the beauty. It's clean. It's
unbelievable space.
It's
you're up there
a
for,
jewel.
When you're up there for the farmer's market, you look out and the view is just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
And the end of the parking lot that they're thinking about moving it to is just, it still maintains that beautiful view.
Vista.
It's a great idea.
I mean, and Stage 4 Park is such a jewel with the playground, the beach, the cupboard, the farmer's market. I mean,
dog park.
It's got, you know, so I think that
it's great.
Conception is a lot easier than probably when you did Burnham's Field.
Yeah.
Because it's there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's. I mean, I think that the one thing that's a little overwhelming is, as we had the meeting the other night, is people start putting up other things that need improvement.
Yeah.
Obviously, Cressy's Beach is in rough shape. There's an old seawall that, you know, back in the perfect storm got collapsed. There's the walkways along the water. There's a lot of things. This is just a start, to get the ball rolling. Maybe there'll be other things that get tackled along the way. But this seemed like, you know, particularly I know the area around the bandstand, the Stage 4 Advisory Committee really wanted that as a priority. And the landscape architect actually came up with some very good ideas on how to make that all work. And then, like I say, this idea of creating some space for the farmers market, something that I've had in the back of my mind a lot, because it's we can bring in some lighting, some electricity, some other type of things that will make it easier for the market to be there. So that's the other type of thing that you can it can work for other events too. Some of the festivals. I know Ringo Tarr was there. He didn't know if the blues festival would work out there very well, but it's not, we're not going to force festivals into this space, but for the farmer's market, it could be a really good space, and it'll be, it has that nice view and that type of thing, so it'll all work out. And then, the Sunday concerts, that area will be much greener, we hope, in the long run type of thing. So.
I thought it was very interesting how you brought up in the meeting that historically parks need to be sort of revamped every 30 to 40 years, because you get things like grass compaction and things like that. So I think it's important for people to know that the city is not just wanting to fix something that doesn't need to be fixed or whatever, that historically this is a really good way to maintain your parks, and they need attention like this every 30 to 40
years. Yeah, I think that is the type of thing that, it is there, just like your house, every 20 or 30 years you need to revamp it, even if you didn't take it.
And also to keep the grass without needing so much water and, low maintenance.
Well, don't they have these new kind of soils that they put the little beads in there that expand and hold water for longer periods of time?
Yes.
Do they ever do that in municipal fields or anything like that, Kim?
I don't know, but you know what? One thing I was going to suggest at the meeting is to plant clove, because it's probably going to be irrigated. You're probably going to have underground irrigation.
That's some of the proposal. I mean, DPW is already looking at that type of thing. So
clover is beautiful,
so
but doesn't it attract bees?
Well, if you mix clover in with regular grass, and historically lawns were, if you look at pictures of lawns from the 1800s and 1900s, they were planted with clover, red and white clover. So it's a great way to, it's constantly stays green, and it's just something you could consider. But
so
it was a very specific thing.
So we'll
bunnies like it.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's good for the pollinators.
Okay. Yeah.
So. Well, I will say that throughout, when Steve came into town, and every single project that came through, his name was attached. In the end, everyone was very, very pleased with it.
Yeah.
So, if nothing else, I think that you get a vote of confidence. Like,
yeah,
you know, you're,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, it's nice. Thanks for coming in and explaining what's happening.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, no, I mean, part of it too is that always getting the community feedback makes them all better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's happened on every project I worked on, and that's part of what I love doing is listening to the community, trying to figure out some things that work and make it better, and then working. I mean, the other thing is that we're gonna ultimately, just like with Newell and Burnham's, as we go through the process, if there's some certain needs, we might be asking the community to step up and raise some money and that type of thing. We have to collaborate. We do, this grant is a 50% match. We'll be going, to the Community Preservation Committee, get some money, but there might be some things beyond that we'll need some community support on. So that all makes it better. But Gloucester folks have been great about stepping up to the plate on all these projects, so it's been great, and continue that model for the future, and it'll be fun to see how it all comes together. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks. We're going to continue our podcast. You're welcome to hang out and contribute and everything else. I think the big story of this past week gained a lot of Massachusetts news was Lillian Lograsso and that Misty Amaro's Gloucester Powerball thing, where they got 490 plus people. And you know, when you look at the odds on these things, they're so insane. But I think like people that don't look at it as the $2 for the ticket as, you know, it just gives you entertainment for a day of thinking of what could and what, you know, the exercise of what I would do with the money.
Yeah, it's fine.
So if you just like look at it that way and not like a financial investment that you think that you got, you know, oh, my odds, I'm playing the odds.
The odds are,
because
you,
the odds are so,
the safe,
yeah, the odds are so ridiculous.
Is that true?
But the part about it that I loved the most was what Lillian said. And she said, this is what she said, but even though we didn't win, I feel like we're still rich. Rich in family, rich in health, and rich in community. This was about community, and it was a blast. And I really did sum it up. Lillian is such a great person. I love her. They call her the Facebook queen of Gloucester, and she's got such a good heart. Like, you know, she is just always positive, always upbeat, very friendly.
She's funny.
The
anchor people were like, how could you not laugh at Lillian Lograsso's laugh? I mean, she's
very gregarious,
awesome.
and just a really a nice person that wants good things for other people.
Yeah,
so
she does.
Kudos to Lillian and her partner in this, Misty Amaro. We don't want to forget her, because it was this girl's idea in the beginning.
Yeah.
And Lillian having the outreach that she has, you know, made it what it was.
She's awesome.
Yeah. So there was a couple great. There was also some other events. There was the open door. Was it opening
ribbon,
for a new
the
space?
Open door ribbon cutting yesterday.
And where was it? Was it at the same facility that got expanded? Or
it's at 28 Emerson. Yeah, where it always has been.
So why was there a ribbon cutting?
Because they redid the whole thing. It's just outstanding.
Yeah.
It's like a supermarket with the warehouses there.
State-of-the-art facility, as opposed to like an old building that they were working out of before.
Yep. Yeah, they added a whole new addition that has more refrigeration space.
In a whole, the dry goods, the non-perishables.
Bigger
diapers.
Place for kids for folks to come in and select their
even
food, so.
Pet food.
Really?
Which, I was saying yesterday that your pet is your life sometimes, and no matter how high, you'll feed your pet. Oh, sorry, Joey. You'll feed your pet before you feed yourself sometimes, and so that. Well, sorry, Joey again, but it was a lot of people there. It was snowing. Nobody cared. Julie is amazing. How she
Julie LaFontaine
is just incredible how she, we did the ribbon cutting and the people sitting, you know, each had a piece of ribbon and it went like this. Oh, sorry, people, you can't see my hands moving. But
it's zigzag.
Thank you. And then they all, you know, she gave out little scissors and everybody cut. And it was just, you know, it makes you
said, what you said earlier, I think was a good point, where you said that it's just a dignified.
It's very dignified. It's not, I think when people have fallen on hard times, with any of us could in any second, it's a nice place for them to be able to go, feel like they can feed their children, feed themselves, and then they can be okay. You know, it's very, very dignified, and it's one of the most worthwhile donations you give, because
they're very active in the community.
They're very active. They're fun. You know, they do fun events.
Did you take any pictures?
I did. I put them up yesterday. You liked
good,
it.
Good. Oh, I saw a picture of the general thing, but
I did
the facility.
Yep. Okay. Well, you couldn't go in all of the rooms because it was very crowded, but I did take some pictures.
I bet she'd
in there.
Love to have us in there for.
Well, she was very happy I was there.
Yeah. Okay.
And amazing thing for the community. I mean, I think it's over $1 million the cost of the mm-hmm. addition and paid off already. I mean,
paid off. No mortgage.
Off, I mean, no mortgage. Amazingly so.
In all of the council
private donations.
Private donations. I mean, Julie and their fundraising networks.
And all the council people were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
of course,
I think,
they were there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but you could see that this is something that people like Melissa and Bill Cox volunteer there. You could see that people really
are investing in
this because. And like
I love
I said,
Melissa Cox. She doesn't just show up for the ribbon cutting. She's always at the.
She certainly is.
You know, She does the one hour at a time gang. She donates her time there. She's just a good.
And I think too, if you you can go anytime Monday through Friday to donate dried perishable foods, especially
non-perishable.
What did I say? Perishable. Sorry.
You mean dried non-perishable?
Non-perishable food, organic if you can. You know, peanut butter, tuna fish. You know the things that are
high
staples.
Protein and good value.
Yeah, bread.
Pasta.
Pasta.
Over there.
I mean, and I was very pleased to be there yesterday. It's almost like...
You also went to the Junie Van... Who went to the Junie Van Dyke thing?
I went to that yesterday.
And how was that like?
That was beautiful. It was a very, very special day for Junie.
Explain the whole thing.
So, I don't know how many number of years ago, Junie started this project of making quilts for each neighborhood. So, and usually, typically, people
and
who
where
are
is
from...
It? Where?
So it was at the Cape Ann Museum,
okay.
And now the all the quilts for that represent each neighborhood of Gloucester are now permanently housed there. I don't know if they'll be permanently on exhibit, but they are permanently will be taken care of and
these quilts
will last forever.
These quilts are made in the older age homes, right? Like
Junie has an art room at the Rose Baker Senior Center, and so they're all constructed there. And the detail on these was just extraordinary. I'm going to post some pictures tonight. It's beautiful. It was a very special day because the whole audience there was comprised mostly of people who had worked on the quilts.
They must have been very proud.
Yeah, so, right. Can you imagine, walking through the galleries of the museum and, you're standing there and there's work that you contributed.
How many quilts are there, Kim?
I don't know off the top of my head, as you know that.
Like how many neighborhoods?
Well, there's 15 or 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's the, they have Briar Neck, Annisquam, St. Peter's, Fiesta, it's really just downtown.
Cool.
Even in the Lanesville one, they have a little group of naked swimmers in the quarry. I mean, the detail is just really...
Naked swimmers in the quarry? I might have to go see this now.
Well, the naked swimmers are done in sort of a Matisse type of fashion.
Oh, the portly ones?
No, the cutouts. You're thinking of Monet. The
big...
Romanesque.
No, they're more Matisse type of, abstractions.
Oh.
No
boobs?
No.
So that's out for you.
Matisse are the beautiful birds and the 60s flies.
Yeah.
They're more like cutout shapes like that.
I'm sure it's beautiful.
And then the greasy pole one is phenomenal.
Yeah,
this, everything is just, the details are just exquisite.
And so is it going to be on display for a while?
Yes, through the month, they think through the month of February. So
does that coincide with their free for Cape Ann residents thing?
Well, that is the month of
January.
January, so get there.
Get
we're going
there,
next
go there
week.
Now.
Yeah.
And, but it was a very, very special day for Junie, as you can imagine, and very emotional day. She was, you know, she had her daughter her sister there, and you know, when you think about it, it's really
she's an amazing woman.
She's an amazing lady, and she, you know, Tom told me that like. She always applies for grants for the Gloucester Cultural Council, which he's on the board of, and she's the person who always writes thank you notes. I mean, she's just a true lady.
Classic.
Yeah,
very classy.
Classy lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. Donna, your Clean City Commission meeting? Reduction in bags.
Reduction in plastic bags.
Bags.
Yeah. Especially those thin ones we get at the supermarket. Well, I don't.
So tell us what the proposal is.
Okay,
proposal?
It is a proposal. It's going to be a reduction. It's going to be like Manchester. Boom, they did it, but they only have Crosby's there. We have a lot more stores. If you notice, Market Basket is encouraging boxes because a lot of cities and towns in Massachusetts have already banned the bag. They banned the bag, and Somerville is one, and Somerville has a huge Market Basket. So. Those I don't think we'll have any problem with the big box stores.
So tell me what the proposal is.
Okay, it's to have a gradual reduction in checkout bags.
Plastic
bags.
And how?
Not so much the produce bags. They haven't. That's not on this one yet. But it'll be like Manchester. When you go to Crosby's, you do not get a plastic bag.
So how do they propose to? For this to go, what's the first step?
Well, the first step everybody's going to have to do is we're doing a question and answer to the merchants. I think, like, again, I don't think we're going to have a problem with the big box stores, but you might have a problem with the smaller people because plastic is cheaper than paper. But when you go to the store and you have to get a plastic bag and they have to give you four to hold what you have in your hand.
Mostly two, but yeah.
But you're doubling what you're already doing. So eventually we just would like to ban the plastic bag. As someone who picks up every Saturday, they're in the trees. As we were sitting in City Hall, they were in trees right around us.
So Donna, hold on. Let's back up again. You said that you had this meeting and the proposal, so was the... What's going to City Council is to say we're going to explore this, or is there actual steps that they're
doing? They're going to do actual steps.
So what are the
steps? They have information from the Sierra Club, Eric Majors from Green Team, who did it in Manchester.
Yeah.
They're there. They're going to. It's going to take. It's not going to happen overnight, and hopefully, we will be able to help our merchants. Give them time. If they have just ordered plastic bags and all that kind of
stuff.
So
you're in an exploratory phase?
Yeah, it's more exploratory,
okay, so,
but the Massachusetts has a lot of cities that do ban plastic bags. California bans plastic bags. California and San Francisco bans plastic water bottles. So we're not reinventing the wheel. Melissa Cox is heading...
I understand. We're in the exploratory phase, or are there actual proposals on what is going to happen? So we're not to that point yet.
No, and it's going to, like anything else, it's going to take time, and we can't just, you know, that's why I'm hopefully thinking that...
People get freaked out when you just...
They're going to say, you're going to run my life, blah, 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 blah. But if you go around in certain places, Costco gives you no bags. BJ's gives you no bags.
It takes time to...
That you use boxes. Market Basket is really pushing the boxes right now, and I think that's a great idea. Most of us have been carrying our bags on our back seat for a long time, but we're hopefully, you know, that some people who are against this have stated that the elderly need plastic bags, and I'm like, let's leave them alone.
I have some massive motion bags I can hand out.
Yeah, well, see, that's we talked about that. There's a lot of swag. You go to a store, you go and they're giving out bags. So hopefully it's going to be a...
The one I would get behind the most would be a banning the styrofoam cup that I'm...
That's another one. That is in that proposal because they were saying that those styrofoam cups, when they get into the bellies of clams and shrimp and things like that, they actually, they're in there. The polystyrene.
Well,
I said that word.
If you ban the styrofoam cups, it would include styrofoam to-go containers.
Yes. Well, a lot of people have gone
I hate
to,
those worse because they make my French fries soggy.
Oh, I know.
Ban those son of a bitches.
And also, think of Dunkin' Donuts. Okay, the small coffee is paper. The large coffee is styrofoam.
Why?
Right. But, I mean, when you go to a lot of these restaurants now, they're all cardboard.
Right.
That, you know, they're getting better about that.
Most Lone Gull...
Mm-hmm.
Cape Ann Coffees.
They're all paper. They're all paper. And hopefully, you know, like I told them at the meeting that it's going to be one step at a time. Because years ago when people said you have to pick up your dog poop, people thought, oh, I'm never doing that. And we're starting to do that.
Go.
So.
All right. Well, keep us informed.
I will. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, darling. Kim, you were at the Coyote meeting. And I said to you, be careful,
right?
Because the Coyote people
we'll go crazy.
Next to the shanty singers and what was the other people, the crazies that like you can't say anything because they come out of the woodwork and like you are the Antichrist. The Coyote people are right up the top of the list of they would rather have a child eaten by a coyote than the coyote, like, whatever. So I told you be careful of this subject when you wrote about it because you absolutely did. But that being said, you went to the meeting and can you give me what the agenda was? What the agenda was, what you got from the meeting, and I also want to address, because I read that some people walked out of from the comments on that post.
Yeah.
Some people walked out of the meeting. So some people weren't agreeing with whatever the point was. So tell me what the agenda was and who the person was that was speaking.
The agenda was purely informational.
Mm-hmm.
It was just to inform people about what is going on with the coyotes.
If people don't say that there has been an explosion in the population of coyotes, they're insane, because 10 years ago, I never saw a coyote 10 years ago. Now, every single day, you hear the coyotes in your neighborhood. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing or anything like that. All I'm saying is maybe there ought to be some benchmarks somehow, or some studies or something like that. And I'm not saying to remove them, anything like that, but there's something going on.
People are feeding them, too, and that's a problem.
Well,
okay, so I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
So it was a wildlife biologist, Pat Huckerbee, I think her name was, and she presented...
From where? What was she
from? I don't know, I wrote it down.
Okay, that's okay, I'll find it. Go ahead.
It's the new... it's the mass fisher... You know,
I'll find
fisheries.
It, go ahead.
Can't remember the whole title.
Yeah.
But she gave a very fabulous presentation on the life cycle of the coyote, and its progression. It was just very, very informative, and I thought her presentation was terrific. And there was also time provided afterwards to allow people to ask a lot of questions, and the whole place was filled. There were two, you know, Steve LeBlanc gave me a count, and they misreported it in the Gloucester Daily Times. There was not 150 people there. There were 250 people there. So
mm-hmm.
It was every seat, and then people on the balcony as well.
Yeah.
So it was quite a crowd there to, you know, learn as much as they could about the coyote and to talk about, you know, if there's any solutions, what to do, how to live with the coyotes. And the woman's main point was get rid of your bird feeders, because the bird feeders attract all the spillage on the ground attracts rodents and small mammals, and if people just either clean up after their feeders, also contain your trash, all that kind of stuff. I did mention that there was some discussion about there was a hunter in the audience, and I provided his phone
number. Did you see my face?
He volunteered to take care of the coyotes.
Yeah, well, that's what he, I mean, that's what he does. He is a hunter. There were other hunters in the audience as well. And
hoping to be able to get permission to hunt the coyotes?
No, I think there was just a little bit of discussion about changing the parameters of how in certain areas you can... I don't know what the exact guide, like there's 100 feet, 150 feet.
Yeah, there's actually, you can't hunt within 500 feet of residences and other type of things. It's just
his idea to change that, to loosen it up a little bit so they can hunt a little closer to houses?
Perhaps, but some, like for example, in Middleton, Rhode Island, they specifically changed the laws because they were having a tremendous problems with coyotes that had become habituated. Nobody wants to just go and kill coyotes. What people are talking about is coyotes who have become habituated to people, who will just, you know, walk right in your yard, walk right up onto your deck, and have no fear of people. That is a concern. But there are very, very few of those that have become, you know, completely habituated to humans. So
Because on Good Morning Gloucester, we've been talking about the coyotes for like 3 or 4 years nonstop, and we obviously we've presented, you know, please don't feed them,
don't
if they're around, make a racket, don't make them feel comfortable, and we know that was a lot of this meeting reiterating
a lot of the meeting was reiterating that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, it's good. I mean,
it's good because some people didn't know that. I mean, when you see a coyote and you run, you're doing the worst thing. You need to, like, flap open your jacket, make yourself look twice as big, yell and scream.
Yeah.
You know, when a coyote had my cat in its mouth and I ran towards it, you know, screaming and yelling, it dropped my cat. So,
right.
You know, I know firsthand that that works.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
And some of the bird feeders I have in my house, I have a basket
underneath it,
so the seed doesn't go down into the ground.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So,
yeah.
Was there any talk about funding? Oh, I want to mention. Hold on. So her name was Pat Huckery. And she's the Northeast District Manager of Massachusetts Division of Fisheries and Wildlife, and she is herself a wildlife biologist. So that's her. Those were her credentials. Was there any mention of funding or them dedicating resources towards trying to establish a kind of count?
Yeah.
So I don't know how hard that could possibly be.
It was discussed, but it would be extremely, extremely expensive to do that.
Yeah.
So they, you know, I think it's more of a budgetary thing is why they're reluctant to do that. And also, it's very hard to I guess it's very hard to track coyotes because once they're, you know, say they're caught, then they're so smart they'll never be caught again. You know what I mean? One thing that was very interesting was how she talked about how there are like packs of coyotes that are like families, but then there are these like adolescent, you know, males or like separate ones, and those are probably the ones, like I see a coyote, I'd say 5 out of 7 times I'm filming and photographing, I see a coyote, you know, run in front of me or whatever. And those are, I never see them in packs. I hear the packs, but I never see the packs. The ones that you see, like, running individually, those are, like, I think she called them the transient ones.
Teenagers?
Yeah, they're, like, they're younger. They're not so much part of the pack. And another thing that we didn't talk about in the meeting, though, which I think would be a little bit interesting to find out, is I know that there are a number of wolves that have escaped from Wolf Hollow, so I wonder
Joey's having a heart attack.
No, because those Wolf Hollow people.
Well,
wolf,
it's a great place.
Don't say anything bad about the wolves.
I wonder if ours are maybe tiny bit proportionately larger because another thing that was very interesting was how she talked about how the coy wolf is not a thing. It's we have different percentages of coyotes. It's all Canis. They're all coyotes. It depends on what part of the country where you'll have a higher DNA of. So in Massachusetts, it's like 85% coyote. And then if you go further south, it's almost 100% coyote with just the little wolves. So 100 years ago, they think was around the time as they were migrating eastward, and they didn't have as many So say you're a coyote migrating eastward and you don't have any other coyotes to breed with, you might breed with a wolf. But if there are a whole bunch of coyotes together, then they'll choose to breed with each other. They won't choose to breed with a wolf. They won't choose to breed with a dog.
Right.
So the Canis lantris or the coyote is a canid soup. It's just a whole mixture of gray wolf, red wolf, dog in a much smaller proportion to the 85% coyote that it is.
Yeah.
So, anyways, it was very interesting. I liked the talk very much.
And
the
whole thing with the coyote, though, is unfortunately, I'm going to say this, when the photographer I saw down on Eastern Point was feeding this coyote.
I saw him
and I said, you shouldn't be feeding the coyote because he was trying to get a photograph.
Jeez.
And I'm like,
that's like number one no-no.
That is seriously bad.
That's number one.
You
know what, Don, I've heard that rumor that people were feeding them, but I didn't know you'd actually seen
I was upset because I felt like, first of all, it's not fair to the coyote.
Right.
Because you're ruining
bad.
The coyote's own sense of how to survive. And for a photograph, get a long lens.
Number one thing
that's
And
that's been happening. People have.
Well, that's number
I
one.
Was talking to someone at the Audubon Society, you know how they're out there now, and they were saying the same thing, that it's not just here.
Right.
That people are feeding wild animals so they can get a picture.
Well, that's how they get habituated, and that's when they start.
Well, we heard about, we read about that you could buy the deer in heat. Urine, and the hunters buy that and they put it around the apple trees and stuff like that, and then they just set up in their house and they pick away at them because the male
right, that's logical.
The male deers come over to get they get a little.
I have to go because I'm meeting my husband
at Zeke's. The plug for Zeke's. All right, Don.
Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful time.
Say hi to Rick for me.
I'm blowing kisses.
Draw out a zombie.
Leaving the promises.
There you go.
My gifts.
Very nice.
Thank you, darling.
That rustling in my earphones.
I'm looking for my keys.
Okay.
If I'm back, it means I can't find my keys.
All right.
So anyways, all in all, it was a very interesting coyote.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll see you, Donna.
Bye.
So it was a productive meeting.
Yes.
So what do you think the people, what were the people that were walking out? What were they upset about?
I don't know. I remember reading a comment, and I couldn't imagine why anybody would walk out or be upset.
Because I tell you why. Because you can't say anything wrong. There's no problems with anything to do with these things.
I don't know. I thought it was informative and well presented.
Yeah.
I think
it was unbiased from a perspective of pro coyote and
coyote. Yes, absolutely. This woman was definitely not hurt.
What was the reaction when the hunter said that we're willing to come and wipe these things up?
Well, people were just,
horrified.
No. You know, everybody was just. I thought everybody was very respectful and listening. I mean, people can also. I put a link up, Joey, to the Cape Ann TV covered it. So if anybody wants to hear the whole entire meeting, they can, and all the questions and things that were asked. One thing I wish that they had done was speak to the biology of Cape Ann, because I think they might have a slightly different problem in further if you get away from the ocean areas, because. We have a lot of abundance of food around here on our beach, not including the people who are feeding the coyote or whatever.
Mussels and the...
Right. We have so much food for them to scavenge, and we have so many miles of coastline, and we have all the crab apples and apple trees and the wild areas. I feel like even if nobody had a bird feeder, we would still have a big coyote population.
That Jody Swenson was the one of the people that says she walked out, and she's the one that's she's got the bird
flock of birds or something.
I forget what the name of her organization is, but she's the one that they
does she do bird rescue?
Yeah, bird rescue, right. Cape Ann Animal Rescue,
okay.
A bird rescue or something.
Why
so she said, "This is what she said." Hi, Nancy. You asked the very question I was going to ask, and when she looked down and said, "That's not what our research shows," I knew it was a biased lecture, and research from Eastern Coyote Research and Project Coyote were not going to be included as part of the educational lecture. That's when I left. Eastern Coyote Research.
Oh, I know what that is. That's that guy, John Way, and he is very much advocating calling it a coy wolf and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of disagreement.
What's the difference if you call it a other than just being the label, what's the, if we know that there's some little portion of it or not?
I feel like then their goal, their ultimate goal is to have it deemed a protected species. So
if it's deemed a protected species, what? That means
then
what?
You can't hunt it.
Yeah, but they can't hunt them now, can they?
Yes, it's legal to hunt them now. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You can hunt coyotes from...
why would anybody hunt the coyotes? Just for sport?
I believe it's from October to March that you can hunt them. So people hunt them if they're a nuisance or for sport.
Just like a deer.
Just like a deer.
Well, they eat a deer, though, right?
Right. Well, people use coyote fur. My coat.
And your coyote. Oh my God! They're gonna be. I'm nervous now that you're gonna walk out. Someone's gonna throw the red blood on you, the red paint on your Canadian goose jacket.
Well, Canadian goose jackets are very, very popular, and they all have coyote fur around the collar. But anyway, so it is legal to hunt coyotes from October to March. You just can't do it during when they have pups. And I think the feeling on that is you don't want to kill a nursing mother. And then I don't know the exact reason for that.
I'm glad that the city had a meeting.
Oh, and you know who called it? Was Stephen LeBlanc.
I know. I saw his picture. Yes. I'm thankful that you put his picture up there. But we've been saying this for a couple of years now, that like someone please recognize it and let's try to make sure that someone's paying attention.
Paying attention.
You know, in case it gets completely out of control and you know. You know, we won't go into our theories that we say. We, you know, in the beginning of the blog, when I first saw the first one, I had a whole different, you know, outlook on coyotes as I do,
now that
I've seen them so many times and they haven't been aggressive towards me, and I've walked closely.
And towards 99.9% of the encounters, they're not aggressive towards humans.
Right. So.
But you know, I must say that I walk around Eastern Point a lot, filming and photographing, and everybody's fearful. You know, if you're out there,
I'd be scared shitless.
Everybody's fearful.
I'm not a wildlife guy.
which isn't, you know, it's just a different way that we live now because of the coyotes.
The whistle. I remember, you got them little whistles you keep them on your keychain.
Yeah, and I think Pat Huckery talked about like having some kind of like a blow, you know, like a bicycle blow horn. Those are very effective.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. We'll line some of those up now.
Right? Yeah, it'd be going off every 2 seconds in East Gloucester. This week, I ran across this thing on Instagram. It was this Instagram account is Betches is the name of it, and it was just like a meme. You know what a meme is, right? It's just like a writing of, you know, it's supposed to be a witty writing or something like that. And the wording in this was, "I've been unintentionally fashionably late my whole life, like as a badge of honor." You know what I mean?
Some people are.
So I wrote about like how you know I think everybody may have these people in their life that
I saw your post, but I thought you were talking about somebody you might know.
I kind of was, there's a couple people that I know.
Well,
that
trying to figure out who it was.
I would never say who they are.
I know.
But does everybody have these people in their life that, like, if there's a family outing or a get together with a group of friends, that they are always late and nonchalant about it and making everybody says they're going to get together at 5 o'clock and they consistently show up at 5:45, 6:30 with a fresh cup of coffee in their hand, you know, that from obviously
they stopped along the way
but you know and and then joke about it afterwards, like how they're, you know, oh, isn't it funny? I'm always late. And there were some people that responded and like, you know, maybe you should think about what you talk about. So maybe they have ADD and they just can't manage their lives properly, and that's not their fault. And I'm like, really? I'm like, no, these people that I know are highly functioning people. They just ignorant and think that their time is much more valuable than you, and expect, you know, and want to make sure everybody's there before they get there so they don't have to waste anybody else's time. Do you have anybody in that?
No,
like that in your life?
I have the opposite, actually. I think it's because my background is Swiss, and everybody's got the Swiss time clock in their genes, and they're always on time.
Yeah.
And we might be just like never late.
I have one friend who's the opposite. He shows up a half hour early, and it's like you're trying to get. I was like, wait.
the party's not ready for him yet.
Yeah, I know, that's it. So.
There's a saying that goes, like in business, like if you're 5 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're 5 minutes late, don't show up because you're fired.
Yeah.
You know, I like that one. But yeah.
I used to be chronically about 5 minutes late, and then my children really trained me when. If I was 5 minutes late coming to pick them up at school, especially my daughter, she would have a complete meltdown. She would be so mad at me.
That's awesome.
And so, and she is amazingly punctual. So I've learned from my kids to be more punctual.
It drives me crazy. It's just, like in my head, I vibe. Only not the people that are, every once in a while, they're honest, we're late, I'm late from thing.
Yeah, there's traffic.
But
there's traffic,
that totally happens. You have a job and your schedule's totally tight. But the people on a weekend, when you say they're going to get together at 6 o'clock or they're going to go to someplace at 6 or you're going to have a, you know, going out for dinner at a certain time,
really,
and they're always late and
they
laugh about it.
They can be
uninvited. And you're like...
if it bothers you, don't invite them.
Well, sometimes you can't because it's,
And also, you know, they could be laughing a little bit from embarrassment, too.
No, they were definitely. It's my thing. I'm late again. Isn't that funny? No.
Choke.
Yeah, no, to me, the thing is, I'm so important. My time is important. But yours really
isn't.
No one else in the group's time is important, mm-hmm. but I am super special, and my time is special. So I'm going to show up when I know everything's ready to go, and I don't have to wait for anybody else. That's what goes through my head when I want to strangle someone. So anyway, so now I just read this. I found this online at Lifehacker. It is now not a crime to let your kids walk to school anymore. And I'll read from the article. Relax, parents. Now you can allow your kids to walk, ride a bike, or take a bus to school without you or your children getting arrested. The recently signed Every Student Succeeds Act contains a section, 858, that protects the rights of kids to walk or go out alone. The act was sponsored by Utah Senator Mike Lee, who is a supporter of the Free Range Kids movement, and provide some hope for parents who feel that their kids should be allowed some autonomy to get by on their own.
What is it? It's in response to a certain incident, isn't it?
Some parents were getting arrested for for allowing their 7 or 8 year old to walk to school.
Walk to school.
Yeah, no, it's sort of in some of what I do. I mean, I go to these meetings, or you know, ask people 30 years ago, you know, did you walk or bike to school? And three-quarters of the people raise their hand, and you could walk in or bike into school, and it's like 10%. So that now there's this mentality, if your kid's walking to school, it's weird. So you get arrested, and it is. And in certain places, parents have it's neglect, you know, and you could get involved with DCF or something like that. It's kind of crazy.
It is crazy.
You know, and people say, I want to let my 8- or 10-year-old, you know, maybe they're walking together. It's just such an anomaly. I mean, I know as a... And I come from a family of 12. We always walk down to school together. Now it's like we're not as big a family, so it's just different. People don't see it. And then people go, whoa. So that's part of it, is to, you know, we're trying to promote kids walking to school, and that's a good way to get some exercise. And it helps them in school, too. If kids you get that, your body going, you get your mind going, too. So that's all part of it. So
I mean, I totally agree. And, you know, the whole reading this got me thinking, because so I drop my daughters off to school on Wednesdays and stuff like that, and I drive them to school, and I see this one, like, I think it's a 7-year-old child walking by herself, and it's Hamilton, and, like, you know,
right.
It's downtown Hamilton. Very unlikely that anything's going to happen, whatever. But it's still jarring, like, mentally to me, even though I recognize when I was a kid, we rode our bikes a mile to football practice, walked by ourselves downtown from the YMCA all over downtown and to school and all that stuff, played in parks, you know, rode our bikes from, you know, the back shore to Rocky Neck to go to Bertha's Penny Candy store. But today, like, I looked at this child, this 7-year-old child walking by herself, and I'm like, oh, that's strange. And this, you know, all of a sudden it's like become a strange thing.
Did you feel like she wasn't safe?
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not passing judgment on the parents at all. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm just saying it's strange to think about it. Wow, when did that become strange? Because that's what we used to do.
Right.
You know, and so these, you know, for them to, and then to read the article
that
we had to pass an act so people wouldn't get arrested for letting their kids go walk to school or go and play in a park.
Mm-hmm.
That was what the whole idea of parks were, so the kids could go, you know,
play.
And what I mean,
it's getting extreme.
So that, I mean, this type of thing, like, you know, we've worked with the schools to get a wellness policy, and part of it is to make sure that's in, because sometimes the schools say don't ride your bike or whatever. So that's the type of thing, is to make it normal again for kids to do this type of stuff. And, you know, DPW's done a great job of fixing up the sidewalks around the schools, and the city even got recognized for that from Walk Boston. So we're trying to make it more normal. I mean, one of the things the city's going to be doing is we're going to be working on Complete Streets program, so that's to actually get some money to make it safer for kids to walk and bike. At O'Malley School, it's kind of crazy to me, there's no sidewalk in there, so we're still trying to make it, you know, it's like,
wow.
You know, it is, it's you know, if you kids walk in, you know, at Riverdale, they actually have to hop over a guardrail to walk over to O'Malley School, so we've been, it's something we kind of lost consciousness of, and it's, we're trying to get people to think of it again, to make it more normal, and make it so that there is a sidewalk for kids to walk to school, or a route for kids to bike to school. So.
Well, they put sidewalks in different places. I mean, the whole Railroad Ave thing.
Yep, that got done. So that was a lot of senior citizens. We had met with them, and you know that neighborhood. There's a lot of senior citizens, and they want to walk in a safe, flatter sidewalk and some better crossings. That was all part of that. So DPW stepped up to the plate to get that redone. So that's all, you know, the type of thing that, you know, particularly one of my first meetings I had when I got here was to meet with Mike Hale, and the city was spending nothing on sidewalks, and since then we've spent, I think, over, you know, $700,000. So it's been a
Washington Street.
Yep.
What's the street that goes up towards East Gloucester School, just after Pine. Richdale's? No, before the
Chapel Street.
So around all the schools, like I say, Centennial, all the way from the Boulevard, all the way up to Washington Street. Street's been chipping away at, and Railroad, and, you know, they'll continue to be doing that. So
kids ride their bikes on sidewalks? Is that allowed?
It's allowed. I mean, it's allowed unless it's banned. The only place it's banned is on Main Street. You know, we did pass when we got the bike lanes passed through. We did say, actually, I think kids can ride. I mean, adults aren't supposed to ride on the sidewalks. I think
kids,
we said kids 8 and
to,
under, and
yeah.
Actually, if you're a senior citizen, you can ride on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
But adults, you know, you're not supposed to be riding on the sidewalk, on Main Street at least. So,
Well, one of the reasons why we moved to East Gloucester was because the kids could walk to school. And it's still that way in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, we have just such a great troop of kids that just run freely.
Nice.
You know, they.
Well, that's what I was an East Gloucester kid, and that's what we did.
Yeah, it should be that way.
I know, but I mean, it is a different day and age. Like helicopter parents and whatever else, it's just like you see at the bus stops. When I was at the grade school, you know, all the kids left their house. The parents weren't with them.
Right.
And we all walked. We all hung out at the bus stop together. There wasn't a parent to be seen at our bus stop.
Yeah.
All like first grade through fifth grade or whatever it was. No parents were there.
You would be embarrassed to have your parent there.
Totally. We played, and I remember, like, you know, we would go there like 20 minutes, a half hour early and throw the ball around, you know what I mean,
yeah.
and play catch and football, whatever it was, before,
yeah.
you know, before we picked up the bus. It was fun.
And I noticed kids used to talk to each other. Now they have their cell phones. So they're all playing their video games.
They're texting each other.
Yeah,
they're texting each other.
They
yeah.
don't talk to each other.
There's a lot of. So the Oscars came out.
The Golden Globes.
Was it the Golden Globes or was it the Oscar nominations?
Nominations.
Oscar nominations. Big outrage about no black people being in there. That's unfortunate. Any movies that you guys want to recommend? You
Spotlight.
Said Spotlight, right?
Spotlight is.
What was the Spotlight? Is that the one about the priest raping the kids, the
yes,
boys?
The priest sex abuse scandal, and it's an incredible film. It truly is. The acting is stellar. You know even though you know the outcome, you're on the edge of your seat the whole
really?
Time. It was fabulously directed.
I'll have to see that.
Yeah,
is that playing at Cape Ann Community Cinema?
The one on Main Street, I get mixed up. Yeah. Yes, it. I understand that it was. I don't know if it still is this weekend. We saw it over at.
I think I saw a press release that they have 8 of the nominated films over at the Cape Ann Community Cinema.
Oh, do they?
We saw it at a matinee over at the Liberty Tree, not realizing that it was playing at Cape Ann Community. But I would highly, highly recommend.
Leslie, have you seen any movies lately?
I saw Brooklyn at the Cape Ann Cinema.
Oh, you did? Yeah,
I've never been to the Cape Ann Cinema, so I really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
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 It was in somebody's living room.
How was the movie?
The movie was a beautiful little love story. I don't know that I would have nominated that for an Academy Award, but it was a good story. I'd recommend going to see it.
Have you seen any movies lately?
Star Wars, that's what we went.
Oh, you
did.
Okay,
so
here's a good question. I was hoping someone saw Star Wars.
Okay.
I saw it Friday night.
Okay,
rank 1 to 7, where does this fall on your Star Wars matrix?
I mean, I think it's, you know, the first one was always great. I think this in towards the first one, I you know, when they went back and started at the, you know, 1 through 3, too many computer graphics. I like that they went back to actual actors, actual robots, and the storyline. I definitely, it was back more towards the original. I enjoyed that part of it. It felt more real, you know, that computer graphics on the, when they went back and redid them was just too much.
I hated the middle series, the part of that, the middle three. It was terrible.
Glad you said that, because Tom and I saw it like so many years ago, and we walked out and we thought it was so boring.
But did you see the first? Did you see the first one when it came out?
The first one.
And did you think it was amazing?
Yeah, we thought that was awesome. So then we went to another one. We were like, so then that's why we hadn't gone to see this Star Wars, because we were like, oh. You know,
I saw the first one that came out back in the '70s. I saw it 7 times. I've watched that movie more than any movie in my life, and I loved it to pieces. This one, right, and at that time when we saw that, we had never experienced special effects like that.
Yeah.
So it was a mind-blowing experience. Do you remember?
Yeah,
wasn't
it
unbelievable? Now, this movie, this latest one, I highly, highly recommend. It's my second favorite one after the first one, because the first one was so special to me.
Right.
But this one here, that female character, the lead character, Rey, was she captivating or was she captivating?
She was, yeah. I mean, it was a good all in all. I mean, and they worked the older characters in as well. I mean, I thought it really came together all in all. And
the story was great.
And this was more about the story, and then, like I say, that's kind of middle set where they went all computer graphics weird.
So if you haven't seen all the ones in between... Would you still like this one?
What we did was we got the DVD from my son-in-law the Return of the Jedi, whatever, the one that's technically the one right before that. Watched that, kind
of
got updated on what. And then obviously they're set up for some more sequels, but
I remember turning off the one with Jar Jar Binks because it was it was one of the part of the middle series.
Okay.
So I didn't see the kind of like the middle ones.
Okay.
And this one still... You could understand and follow.
Okay.
The point being,
right.
I don't think you have to have seen all the previous Star Wars to appreciate this movie.
Yeah, that was my question. Okay. Yeah.
It was great.
Okay.
Very
good.
Well,
maybe I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, gotta go see it. Yeah, this is my slow time of year, so I'm looking forward to like catching up on all the Oscar movies that, you know, that good dialogue. The good dialogue movies.
I bet one movie you're not going to see is Remnant.
What's Remnant about?
Reverend. The one
Leonardo DiCaprio
and the bear, and he gets buried alive and all that kind of stuff.
No, it doesn't interest me.
He's in the wildlife depicted as, you know, as brutal and as rough it can be for like 2 hours.
That's Revenant.
Revenant.
Revenant?
Revenant.
That's strange.
It's 150 minutes long.
Yeah, I'm not going to go see that. No, I'm not going to go see that either. No, thanks.
No, but yeah, everybody.
I didn't see the award list. Was the one with Johnny Depp playing Whitey Bulger? Was that?
Oh God, we made that prediction. I have to find out.
I don't think it was.
Oh wow, it was so long ago that it might not be at the top of people's.
Blue Mass.
Black Mass.
Black Mass.
Okay, hold on, Oscar.
I hate how movies that are just released right before. Did Johnny Depp get anything?
Hold on, amazing. Best picture, best actor. Oh wow, he's not even nominated.
Oh my God.
And I said that Matt Damon movie just came out.
Right.
Leonardo DiCaprio just came out. I don't know, Trumbo, Bryan Cranston. I'd never heard of that one. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs movie and The Danish Girl. That one just came out, so I guess that's the criteria. It has to be released within the last 2 months, or you're not going to be considered.
Oh, really?
Well, it's not truly.
Right, but
it happens a lot. It happens a lot.
Yeah,
it happens.
Right. That's such a shit. Because that movie, God, that was a great movie. Did you see that one? Did you see Black Mass?
I was afraid to see it. No, it's not.
Seriously, it's not.
Her nightmares at night.
No, it's not. It's like it has about as much violence as an episode of Law and Order. It's not super violent.
Yeah.
There's violence, one little episode, but.
All right. Well, there you go. It's GloucesterCast 166. It's in the books for Leslie. All right. Hold on, Leslie. We've got to come right back to you. And we have Leslie Heffron with the Art Rundown.
So there are a lot of things going on in Gloucester and Rockport, as usual. And I wanted to highlight a few of them for you. You can find everything that's going on the blog, of course, with James Eve's cultural calendar.
At the top of the blog, it's always sticky right there.
Yeah, he's got everything listed. But a couple of the highlights are going on at the Cultural Center at Rocky Neck. There's going to be a big show called For the Birds, and that's a juried multimedia exhibition of avian-inspired art. And the proceeds, some of the proceeds, will go to the Mass Audubon. And
couldn't
so
be
that,
a better time for that, because isn't like the upcoming beginning of February is the number one migratory viewing for people looking at birds that we don't normally see on the back shore and stuff.
It's a huge
halibut point. The chamber usually has a birding.
Did they not do it this year?
Because you know something, I was there and they didn't mention it. I wonder.
Interesting.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Leslie.
So that runs from January 28th to March 6th. And the opening, if you want to mark your calendars, the opening reception is January 31st from 2 to 4. That's a Sunday. And then related to that show are two wonderful lectures. Kim Smith, who's sitting right next to me, who's a wonderful photographer and filmmaker, will be doing a lecture called Beautiful Birds of Cape Ann, and she's certainly filmed and photographed a lot of beautiful birds on
Where's
Cape
that going to be?
That's at the Cultural Center. Thursday, February 18th at 7. And then another gentleman, Chris, do you want to talk about that at all, Kim?
About that?
Your lecture.
I do just want to say that when they asked me to do it, there are many, many more people from, you know, Mass Audubon and places like that who are very qualified to speak to birds. I'm just, you know, talking about the beautiful birds that we see on Cape Ann and a little bit about filming, photographing them, and why they're here in our region. And it also, it does tie in, I'm going to mention this, it does tie in a little bit to my Monarch film, which also covers a lot of bird species in our area. So, but I'm very, very excited to do this. I'm thrilled to be part of the show. It was a juried show by the head of the Massachusetts Audubon Bird Museum. So I have three pieces in the show, and there are a number of artists who were accepted. So it was, it's going to be a beautiful
great honor.
Thing. Yeah, it's good. It is an honor to be invited to speak and to have works in it. So I'm very honored.
Nice.
So.
And then the other lecture related to this exhibition is by a gentleman named Chris Leahy. He's the chair of field ornithology at Mass Audubon, and he's going to be speaking about the work of
John J. Audubon.
So that's on, that's a week before Kim's lecture, and that's on Thursday, February 7th at 7. So definitely, and there are other things going on related to this exhibition, which I'll talk about.
Further down the line.
That's great. Always a wonderful place to be.
It's a
cultural center.
It's a beautiful space.
Right. It's a hub for any cultural related events going on in the Cape. And then I wanted to mention that there are other galleries on Rocky Neck that are open during the winter. People are going down there.
I didn't even know that.
Well, there
that's
are.
Good
I'm
news.
Gonna tell you. I'm going to tell you right now who they are.
Okay.
Ellen Kroger Gallery. She's right on the right as you come in. The Side Street Hughes Bosco Gallery. The Getaman
Gallery.
Where is
that? Where is the side? Because they're in social mice. They keep coming up in my Instagram feed, I think, and
down,
I don't know who they are.
I think they're further down past the studio, if I'm correct about that.
Where EJ's Gallery used to be?
Down in that area.
In that area?
Yeah. Getaman Gallery. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, I'll look it up.
I have not been there, but I'm going to make a point of it to go now because
yeah.
I know I didn't know all these galleries were open. So the other one is the Getaman Gallery, which is on the right, right kind of near Sailor Stands.
They're open year round, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The James B. Hand Fine Art Gallery, John Nesta Gallery. He's been there for a long time, and the Zinc Gallery. So they're all open. I hope people can wander down there. Rocky Neck does not close in the winter. There are things.
Oh, the Side Street Gallery is that really beautiful space just before Sailor Stands on the right hand side. They have the beautiful flower boxes and that really cool wrought iron
door.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I know.
Okay.
It's gorgeous inside there.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
It is.
I didn't know that was called the Side Street Gallery. Maybe
so,
that's something
yeah, so people should take a walk. It's get outside, get some fresh air, and walk around the galleries. There's a lot to see.
Well,
and
while everybody's out on the snowy owl prowl.
And then related to the exhibition at the Cultural Center is another exhibition down at Trident Gallery, 189 Main Street, and Dr. Matthew Swift is the director down there, and he's doing a show called Nest. It's the third annual exhibition in partnership with Mass Audubon's Museum of American Bird Art, and there'll be lots of artists represented, some of whom you might know from Gloucester and some that may not be familiar.
But Charlie Carroll's in there.
I didn't see his name.
No.
That doesn't mean he's
not.
Interesting,
because he's always penning those.
But he's also a permanent person at Trotting Gallery,
right.
So they probably just include
So there's an exhibition opening on the 13th of February, and there's also an exhibition of performance art with a natural history theme. That's on February 6th at 7. So that's
they have a lot
of things going on in that gallery. It's not just visual art. Mm-hmm. They have performances and musical operas.
Well, his wife is the Slifer girl, right?
She's a dancer.
Yeah. No, she's very...
she
dances, so she does these interpretive dances and stuff like that.
And then last but not least, I'd like to talk just for a minute about a wonderful gallery in Rockport called I Art Colony. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. It's on Broadway. It's the only red building on Broadway on the left as you're going down towards town, 42 Broadway, and it's owned by Bob and Jill Whitney Armstrong. They live there, so... they do have
Did Bob Armstrong, was he originally on Pleasant Street?
I think they grew up in the summers on the street that goes up along Good Harbor Beach.
Okay.
I don't know the name of that street.
Okay.
But so there, the I in Art Colony stands for fiercely independent and idealistic. And they have a current show called Party at I Art Colony, which is going on through January January 30th. Jill Whitney Armstrong, who's, I said, one of the owners, is one of the participating artists. She's a beautiful artist who does expressionistic oil paintings that are very, her brush strokes are very expressionistic, and she uses a lot of paint. You can tell she loves to paint. She loves the process of painting. So her work is fantastic. There's another artist, Brian Burkhart, who's a fine artist and designer, and his design, he did things for Project Runway. Do you know that show
on
TV?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, he's had his work bought by the Kenneth Cole designer line, and he's had his jewelry bought by Nicki Minaj, if you know who she is. And then
she's famous for her booty.
And then there's another, I actually, Joey, I sent you a couple pictures. I don't know if you can post them. One is of Tess Atkinson's very ethereal large scale photographs of soft focus cherry blossoms. I sent it to you. It's fantastic. One of her pieces, not a piece from this show, but a larger image of the same thing was just bought by Giselle Brady. So she's a wonderful artist. You would love you would love her work. I hope maybe you can post it on the blog.
Probably not for the Gloucester cast, but it could be a separate post. You send it to James.
Okay, I'll send
James
it.
Does the art stuff.
Okay, and then Judith Scott Larson, she is another artist who uses the figure as a canvas, and she projects images and projects writings and narratives on the figure and then takes
naked?
Pictures of them.
Oh,
I
might be interested in this one.
And then her husband, Paik Larson's also a member of this show, and as is an emerging artist, Molly Siegel. So what they do is represent emerging artists and internationally known artists currently represented by major galleries, museums, and collectors. So it is a fantastic gallery and definitely worth seeing. Yes, yeah, so you can go down. They'll be in the show notes. The hours are listed, but since they live there, if you call them up and they're there, they'll certainly take you into the gallery. So
that's isn't it embarrassing how I always bring everything down to the lowest comment? I feel like Michael Scott from The Office, like such a low IQ sense of humor. Oh, Lord.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thanks for that, Leslie. That's fantastic.
How's your yoga going, Joey?
Fantastic. I went twice last week.
You did?
Well, twice the week before. I was in Vermont last week. What?
I'm very depressed. I haven't been to yoga.
You'll be
in a
able
month.
To go back.
Oh, because
your arm gets a little better. You'll be able to go back.
It's so depressing.
All about the yoga, man. I got to go to Cape Ann Power Yoga this week.
Where did you go this past?
I went to Treetop. See, both of them on Cape Ann Wellness. So I went to Treetop. Now I want to go to Cape Ann Power Yoga, spread the love a little bit.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, had some. I forget what the name of my instructor was at Treetop. Aaron, maybe.
Aaron Rossi.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was. Young girl, brunette.
Yes.
Yeah, very nice. So there you go. Another Gloucestercast. Gloucestercast 166. Thanks, Steve Winslow, for coming and sharing with us.
Thank
it was a lot
you.
Of fun, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Joey. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.